Lodi kumbale tene ene pangu kureye se te di tenyu bi sonta de che. Tene ende da rangyu bi ki kar sonre se ne da che tam che denpa jubo tongba se de ne denpa jubo zimbi zimba de da kar sore tenzin se de re ina che tam che rangshin jubo re se ina che tam che rangshin jubo re de ina denpa ma jubo re se denpa jubo zimbi tenzin de da nyomo ba tam chungya ki zayu gyu de re Depoyaki Tablandilla, Ni Chetamche, Demotuba, Tompe, Tombani, Topulati, Esse, Mudusine, that Uma Tingubata, Marangu Sonda, Dissem.
All the suffering that we experience, this comes from our own way of thinking, our own afflicted minds. And our afflicted minds have as their root cause the ignorance of self-grasping. According to the highest philosophical school, the Prasangika Madhyamika, they state that the ignorance of self-grasping or true grasping is grasping at phenomena as existing inherently or by way of their own nature or truly. So these are synonymous for Prasangika. And they say that this ignorance can be eradicated through the cultivation of the opposing wisdom, the wisdom that realizes emptiness, that phenomena are empty of true existence or inherent existence. Svatantika, their presentation is slightly different. So they say that phenomena appear as being self-existent as well as being independent when they are not, independent of requiring labeling by mind. And this is what they mean by true existence. And the fault that they assert with how phenomena appear is that they appear not to require labeling for mind. That they appear as being self-existent, that is not mistaken. But this appearance of them being independent, this is. And hence that's the appearance of true existence, and realizing that phenomena are empty of true existence is what they strive to do.
Nasem zembege anche tam kasa chiru dundu juba zimbe zimbadi chiru dundu juba zimbe zimbadi da nyomo ba tam chue zayu gyunyom de chiru dundu juba zimbe zimbadi es da da chiru dundu juba chiru dundu jube tongba di tongba ni chiru dundu jube tongba de le da ni dong se ro ni dong se ni dong se de da di cha shu de de to be ge lo de da tong ni dong to be ge cha ma ni to be lo se ni to be lo di gomba le tene chiru dendu zhuba zimbe zimba di bangu gure yese zeta dawa tardu di chiru dendu nidong dobi ke xerab di da dawa tardu xie andi ta nyomongba zayu gyuri chiru dendu zhuba zibi zimba di nyomongba tam chungye zayu gyuri di bomba la nidong dobi lo di gomba gure yese zeta ta sem zembe zayu tardu kusungda di dire sem zembe karasana chiru dendu zhuba zibi zimba di nyomongba tam chungye zayu gyuri di dire yese Chiru dundu juba zibi zimba di nyomomba tam jengi junye ge zayu yu di res. Deji uma tenju bila ne rangshin juba zimbi zimba larwa. Deji uma rangju bila denba juba zimbi zimba larwa. Da sem zembi chiru dundu juba zibi zimba di nyomomba tam jengi zayu yu di chiru dundu juba zibi zimba res. Da chiru dundu juba tongba di da rangshin tongba ni se di chiki tamme se di res. De chiru dundu juba tongba tobi lo di da dawa tardu.
The Chittamachans assert that all phenomena appear and apprehended as being established externally. But phenomena are not externally established despite appearing so. But nevertheless, because they are apprehended or grasped at as such, this is the root cause of our afflictions. And when one realizes that phenomena are empty of being established externally, one realizes emptiness, or, to express it differently, the selflessness of phenomena. And the wisdom that realizes the selflessness of phenomena is the wisdom realizing non-duality. And this is the final view, the highest view, as presented by the
Chittamatrans.
The Vaibhashikans Harchantika, they hold that the cause of all our afflictions is grasping at the self as being self-sufficient, substantially existent. When one realizes the self is empty of being self-sufficient, substantially existent, one has realized selflessness. Or to express it slightly differently, the selflessness of persons, because they don't accept the selflessness of phenomena. And the realization of the selflessness of persons, and the person is empty of being self-sufficient, substantially existent, is the final view for the Vaibhashikans Harchantika. And they assert this is the antidote to the afflictions. Where there is agreement across amongst all Buddhists is that the suffering that keeps us bound within samsara is created or comes from our contaminated karma, which has been accumulated by our various afflictive minds, which have as their root self-grasping. So all Buddhists agree with that presentation of how we remain trapped within cyclic existence. And they agree with the path to gain freedom, which is to eradicate self-grasping, and that is what leads to liberation from the suffering realms of samsara. Where they differ is in terms of how they present the self, and therefore the particular wisdom. The self, firstly, how they differ is the self, the presentation of the self that is grasped at, and they thereafter differ in terms of the contrary wisdom that needs to be cultivated to eradicate that ignorance of self-grasping. The Prasangika they assert that it's grasping at the self and phenomena as being inherently existent is the root cause of keeping being trapped in cyclic existence, and the wisdom realizing the emptiness of inherent existence is the antidote. The Madhyamika Svatantika, the other middle way school, they say that the root cause of our suffering is ignorance grasping at true existence, taking phenomena such as the self as existing truly. And for the Svatantika, true existence and inherent existence are not synonymous. Prasangika say they're synonymous, but not the Svatantika. Furthermore, the Svatantika say that the antidote to the ignorance grasping a true existence is the wisdom that realizes the emptiness of true existence. The Chittamatrans, they say the root cause of all our suffering is our grasping at phenomena as being externally established. And the antidote to that is it can be expressed in two different ways, either as the wisdom realizing that phenomena are empty of being externally established, or the wisdom realizing non-duality. So that's how the Chittamatrans present the ignorance that keeps us bound in samsara and the wisdom that leads to freedom. And then lastly, the two lower schools, they have the same presentation, the Vaibhashika and the Svatantika. The ignorance that grasps at the self as being self-sufficient, substantially existent, is the root cause of all our suffering. It keeps us bound in samsara because it's from this that our afflictions arise. And the antidote that leads to liberation is realizing selflessness, which is that the self is empty of being self-sufficient, substantially existent. So this is what we looked at this morning, briefly mentioning what is similar across all Buddhist what is agreed by all Buddhists, and then where the primary point of difference is between the various philosophical tenets. Now we come to the final bullet point on page 17. Non-Buddhists could not even assert the mere selflessness of persons, and from that, therefore, they derive the necessity of asserting a permanent, partless, independent person. So three bullet points above refer to the non-prasangika Buddhists, and now we come to the assertion of non-Buddhists. Non-Buddhists, they don't assert selflessness at all. So this is the meaning of the first part. Non-Buddhists could not even assert the mere selflessness of persons. They cannot assert selflessness, or they are unable to assert selflessness. Rather, they assert that the self does exist. And how so? As permanent, in other words, as unchanging. As partless, as not being comprised of various parts, or dependence on parts. And as independent, independent from causes, or being, using a synonym for independent, under its own power, self-powered, not under the power or influence of something else, namely causes. So this is how they don't just assert that the self exists, but they assert it to exist in a way that is unchanging, that has no parts, and is independent from causes.
Gansa Jawa
And they say the self is, or the self, the person, the I, is permanent. This means that it's unchanging. And they say that the self does not change from life to life and throughout this life. It hasn't changed. It does not change. It is permanent or unchanging. The physical and mental aggregates, the body and the minds, yes, these change. These are impermanent. But the self does not. Moreover, the self is not dependent on parts, singular. And it is also not dependent on causes. It is self-powered or independent. This is how the self exists, according to non-Buddhists.
Continuing in the text, His Holiness then writes in the final paragraph on page 17, it is asserted that phenomena do not exist by reason of their not being found when the object imputed is sought. That contradicts what is widely known in the world, for it is contrary to direct perception, which affirms the existence of these phenomena that are all included within the material world and beings. Our own experience affirms the facts as well as that varieties of help, harm, pleasure and pain are produced.
And
The answer to the previous question was a summary, included a summary of Buddhist views as well as non-Buddhist views. Now, with this question, we're returning to the domain of the Prasangika. So where it says here, if it is asserted that phenomena do not exist by reason of their not being found when the object imputed is sought, that contradicts what is widely known in the world. So here, what's being stated to the Prasangika is that, hang on, when you say, when you investigate to see whether a phenomenon exists in the way that it appears, and you come to find that it doesn't exist, how can you say, therefore, how can it be? Because that seems to contradict what is widely known in the world. So we can liken this to the linking question, the previous question, where we see at the top of page 17, the question about an actual person and the person of a dream, or a form, or the form in a reflection. So here, the person is saying, but if you investigate and you can't find it, that seems to be, therefore it doesn't exist. And that is contrary to the world, where things do exist, people and phenomena, other phenomena do exist. But what Prasangika is saying, that when you investigate, what you don't find is a, for example, the person. When you investigate the person, you don't find a person that exists in the way that it appears. In other words, as independent, as self-existent. That person is not found. But that does not mean that the person doesn't exist at all. In fact, it is unacceptable to say that when one does an ultimate analysis and does not find the person, therefore the person is non-existent. That is unacceptable, the Prasangika say in response. That is unacceptable to say that because the person does not exist in the way that it appears, therefore it doesn't exist at all. That is unacceptable. That is mistaken. Whatever the object of thought is, whether it's the person, whether it's any material possession or a home, whatever it may be, it does. What we need to first come to recognize is how it appears to consciousness, and then investigate to see if that appearance is in accordance with reality or discordant with reality. So we need to come to recognize how phenomena appear to us, which is the way they appear is as real as true, which means they appear to exist, they seem to exist in the way that they appear, which is independent. Independent of causes, independent of parts, independent of imputation of my mind. So in other words, not requiring imputation, parts, or causes in order to exist, because it appears to exist by way of its own nature, essence, or characteristics. That's how all phenomena appear. Whatever it is, whatever our object of thought is, that's how it seems to appear. When we investigate, then, the next step, to see does the phenomenon exist in the way that it appears, let's say it's a person, we recognize, or we come to see, no such person, no such independent person can be found. Because if a person did exist in the way that it appears, not requiring parts, causes, or imputation in order to exist, because it existed by way of its own nature or essence, that nature or essence or characteristic should be found. But it can never be found because it has never existed. So it's that type of person, the person that appears to consciousness, does not exist. But it doesn't mean that a person doesn't exist at all, because there's someone meditating, there's someone eating, walking, and so forth. How does the person then exist? The person does not exist in the way that it appears to consciousness as independent, but the person does exist dependently. So the person that appears to mind, that appears to consciousness, this, when we sought, cannot be found and doesn't exist. But a person does still exist, but as a dependence arising. That is how the person does exist. Still with this first sentence, this is perhaps the second part of it. For it is contrary to direct perception, which affirms the existence of these phenomena that are all included within the material world and beings. So again, I was just explaining the term material world and beings, because the Tibetan uses a quite common expression, the container and the contained. And so how we've translated it, how it's been translated here is a little clearer. But the container and the contained refers to the material world, so all material phenomena. And the contained refers to the sentient beings abiding within that world, so all classes of beings. This is what's meant, all classes of beings and the world in which, the material world in which they live, is what is meant by the container and the contained. So all of these exist. It is not acceptable to say that these do not exist. It's not acceptable to say that the material world or the container does not exist and that the beings or the contained do not exist. That is not the case. They do exist.
That is ne 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 ne
This needs to be very clear, that everything in the world, the material world as well as beings, these exist. But they do not exist in one way, and they do exist in another. The way they do not exist is the way they appear to consciousness as being under their own power, existing by way of their own nature or essence, being independent. The way that they do exist is dependent on causes, parts, and imputation. And the way that this dependent way of existing is their conventional existence. So phenomena do exist conventionally, and they exist in dependence on other How they do not exist is as under their own power or independent. Rather, they do not exist in that way. Rather, they exist dependent on others, causes, parts, and imputation. Continuing with the text, our own experience affirms the fact as well that varieties of help, harm, pleasure, and pain are produced. From our own experience, we know that there are things that are beneficial to ourselves and others, and others that harm us. For example, certain food types will nourish us, and others will bring us harm. Certain medicine will be suitable and will heal us. A different medicine may be unsuitable and have no impact or even harm us. This we know from our experience, and these all exist. So too, we at the moment, we have a particular frame of mind, a particular mood, and at other times, a different mood. Sometimes we're in a better mood, other times, not such a good mood. These are all phenomena, and they all exist. The varieties that benefit and or help, harm, pleasure and pain, happiness and suffering, these all exist. They all exist. So these are phenomena that appear to consciousness. Taking them as an object of meditation, how do they exist? We investigate and we see they exist dependent on causes, dependent on labeling by mind. So for example, if we take as an object our mind and we look at how we are feeling, let's say we're in a good mood. So investigate that. Is it self-existent? Or did it come about in dependence on causes? And we recognize it arose in dependence on causes. So therefore, it is dependent on causes. Thereafter, we labeled it as a good mood. And likewise, if we are unhappy, we investigate this consciousness, take it as our object, and we will recognize that suffering feeling has come about in dependence on causes and required labeling by mind. So this is how we can come to recognize that help, harm, pleasure, and pain all exist. The way the phenomena appear is as being independent or self-existent. This is not how they exist at all. No phenomenon exists in this way. No help, no harm, no pleasure, no pain, no happiness, no suffering. Nothing exists from its own side, independent of any other phenomenon. Nothing exists in this way. Then the final sentence in this paragraph. Thus, what is the meaning of not being able to find illustrations of these diversities of phenomena, such as self and other, material world and beings, when we seek these varieties of definitely existing phenomena? Here we take a variety of phenomena, whether the self or ourself or another person suffering or something harmful or beneficial or happiness or any material results, and we ask and we look, how does it appear? And it appears as if it exists or is established by way of its own essence, nature, or characteristic, and therefore is independent. It exists by under its own power. In other words, its own nature, essence, or characteristic, and therefore is independent of other phenomena, not requiring them. And when we investigate, we'll find that whatever phenomenon we are taking as our illustration, we'll find it does not exist in the way that it appears. Then the next part of the reflection would be to recognize that whilst the phenomenon does not exist in the way that it appears, for example, whether it's a feeling of unhappiness or the self, it does not exist in the way that it appears. But that doesn't mean it's non-existent. It does exist. And how so? Dependence on other. Dependence on imputation by mind.
So
to summarize, it's what is to be found is that whatever the phenomenon is, it does not exist in the way that it appears as independent, but it does exist, but only dependently, dependent on imputation. So that in brief is what is being discussed here, but it's been presented throughout the text in many different ways so that we can harm or counteract the strong habituation to believing that phenomena exist in the way that they appear, that events and feelings and consciousnesses and ourselves and others exist in the way they appear to us and we apprehend them. So this, in brief, is nothing exists in the way that it appears. But it does exist conventionally, but merely as an imputation by mind.
Now coming to the end of our year together looking at this text, and over these 17 pages, whilst we've looked at many different techniques to come to understand reality, they're all presenting us with a wide range of techniques to come to the same point, which is that phenomena appear to consciousness as existing by way of their own nature or essence or characteristics. But when we investigate, we realize that this appearance is not in accordance with reality. And we recognize that the phenomenon is empty of existing in the way that it appears, despite continuously our mind believing that phenomena exist in the way they appear, and therefore all our afflictions arise. But actually, no phenomenon exists in the way that it appears. But phenomena do still exist. They exist conventionally, and how so? Dependence on imputation by mind, dependence on labeling. So therefore, when we seek, when we investigate, we do not find the phenomenon, because we do not find this nature or essence by which it appears to exist. But when we don't investigate, we can function in the world, because conventionally phenomena exist, but the way they exist is not how they appear to mind. Rather, they require imputation by mind. This is a meditation we need to engage in repeatedly, to keep reminding ourselves through habituation, through seeing again and again,
that no phenomenon exists in the way that it appears. It is empty of existing in the way that it appears. And the understanding of that is the wisdom understanding emptiness. This is emptiness. Every time we recognize that the objects of thought, whether if we investigate our unhappiness, we recognize our unhappiness is a dependent arising, came from causes, and we labeling it in this way, we're feeling unhappy. The cause of our unhappiness, this too, came about in dependence and causes and labeling. And the person experiencing the unhappiness, too, came about in dependence on causes and labeling. Nothing exists in the way that it appears. But phenomena do exist conventionally, dependent on causes, parts, and in particular, imputation by mind. So therefore, no phenomenon exists by way of its own nature, but everything that exists, exists in dependence on labeling by mind. This then brings us to a quotation from sutras, and now we at the top of page 18. The 25,000 stanza Perfection of Wisdom Sutra says, it is thus, this bodhisattva is only a name, this perfection of wisdom is only a name. These forms, feelings, discrimination, and compositional factors and consciousnesses are only names. It is thus forms are like illusions. What's presented in the sutra quotation is easy to understand if one has understood the presentation of the Prasangika thus far, that all phenomena exist conventionally only as dependent on imputation or labeling by mind. Means, It is thus, this bodhisattva is only a name. Here, what this means is that a bodhisattva only exists independent on labeling by mind. The bodhisattva is not independent or self-existent at all, but has come about independent on causes and labeling. The causes that led to the attainment of the result of a bodhisattva is, first, having come to realize the sufferings of samsara, independence on that, love and compassion for suffering beings was generated, independence on that, altruistic attitude of universal responsibility was generated, and independence on that, bodhicitta itself was generated. So here we already see not just the causes that lead to bodhicitta, but that the causes too are dependent. And when bodhicitta itself is generated, and that bodhicitta becomes uncontrived, then the being in whom uncontrived bodhicitta has been generated is suitable to be labeled by mind as a bodhisattva. So in this way, we see that bodhisattva is only a name. This perfection of wisdom is only a name. Perfection of wisdom, then, is the consciousness that has realized reality in the continuum of a bodhisattva. It isn't just any wisdom. It's a wisdom relating to the understanding of reality, and it's not in the continuum of any old being, but in the continuum of a bodhisattva. Hence, it is amongst the six perfections, the sixth one, the perfection of wisdom. So this perfection of wisdom, this consciousness that realizes emptiness, this does not exist in the way that it would appear to consciousness. It is not independent, it's not self-existent, it doesn't exist by way of its own nature or essence. Rather, it has come about independent on a vast number of causes. In particular, the practitioner of an extensive period of a lifetime has received and studied teachings on reality, on emptiness, and on this basis of knowledge has repeatedly meditated on what they are learning, integrating it ever deeper within themselves. And in conjunction with this, because this is a bodhisattva, they would have also been accumulating the causes that led to the attainment of uncontrived bodhicitta. And when these two had both been fully accumulated, the causes that led to the attainment of uncontrived bodhicitta and a realization of emptiness, an unmistaken realization of emptiness, then the suitable basis has been accumulated. So all the causes required have been completely accumulated for that basis to be suitable, to be labeled perfection of wisdom by mind. These forms, feelings, discriminations, compositional factors, and consciousnesses are only names. The meaning here is exactly the same as with the previous two illustrations, so I don't need to go into it in detail. But all of them, whether it's a form or a feeling, etc., all have come about in dependence on causes and require labeling by mind. It is thus, forms are like illusions. So what this means is that phenomena appear to our consciousness in a particular way, but we've recognized they do not exist in this way. And in fact, no different from an illusion. A skilled magician will conjure perhaps an elephant before us, and an elephant will appear to our consciousness. It may look and act just like an elephant, but of course it is not. So too, with how phenomena appear to us, they do not exist in the way they appear. Appearance and reality are not concordant. The way phenomena appear and the way they exist in reality is not concordant. The way phenomena appear are like illusions. For those who haven't heard teachings like you have on this topic, should they immediately be introduced to the sutra, it will seem very strange. Bodhisattva is only a name, perfection of wisdom is only a name, form is only a name, feelings are only a name. This doesn't seem to make much sense, and moreover, won't carry any meaning for them. But for yourselves who have created vastly different causes, independent on the causes of receiving these and other teachings, immediately the meaning here should be clear to you. And therefore, this sutra verse is an excellent basis for reflection. As you can read this, and it's immediately seeing bodhisattva is only a name, then one realizes bodhisattva only exists in dependence on imputation by mind. A bodhisattva can only exist conventionally through being labeled by mind, and so forth with other phenomena too. What we've been looking at in this text is the supreme technique for achieving happiness and eliminating suffering. What's really required by each and every one of us is to take this knowledge and apply it to ourselves. Everything that we experience in other words, everything that arises in mind, where it appears to mind, arises within us. Every experience we should recognize, we should relate to through this, that it does not exist in the way that it appears, but it's only come about in dependence on causes, and therefore it will pass. And it requires imputation. How we relate to it has a profound impact on how we experience it. So everything that we experience, as well as what we observe in the world, we should start to relate to in this way.
Encourage you in our time apart
that you reflect on dependent arising. These teachings that we've been looking at all here, and also previously with other topics, recognize that every object of thought, everything one thinks about, everything that appears to mind, that is not inherently existent. It's just an appearance that has come about independent on certain causes and conditions have been come together. That's all. So we have covered this many times. The text has repeated this in slightly different ways many times. Now you have the opportunity, these months apart, to look at this repeatedly and have it deeply penetrate oneself. And if it penetrates well, then when one experiences something that right now we try to avoid, it will have a vastly different impact on us. So for example, people generally don't like to be criticized, don't like to be put down, put in their place. And someone doesn't know where they are, clearly. And we also, if we look at this very broadly, when others act against our wishes, not agreeing with us, seeing things in the same way, whatever it may be, right now, due to these unwanted events, anger, pride, afflictions like these spontaneously arise with no freedom, no control. We don't will our pride to arise. We don't will our anger to arise. It just does. So just from this, how these sentences have been put together, it's clear. Anger, pride, these afflictions came about independent on causes. Someone acting against our wishes, criticizing us and so forth. So when the cause was met, the result came. That's all. This emotion that we feel, that's all it is. When the cause was met, the result came. Nothing more than that. So the causes that led to the rise of anger are varied, only one of which is what the person said or someone acting against our wishes. Where we have influence is to deal with our inner world, to meditate on this, taking real life examples and looking at what happens and coming to appreciate that everything that appears does not exist in the way that it appears to, but is free of existing by way of its own nature and therefore can be eradicated and so forth. So take all these teachings you've heard. And then in dependence, or rather to the extent that one comes to understand the workings of one's own mind, one can then extrapolate that to the experiences of others, knowing that they are no different from us. They, just like us, react when causes are met. When a well-developed meditator meets a cause, and that same cause is met by someone who's not a well-developed meditator, they react very differently because of the causes they've accumulated within them. They meet the object, their consciousness arises. That's all it is. Nothing self-existent. But because the accomplished meditator has developed specific causes, their experience of that same event is vastly, vastly different. So I encourage you to look at this. And as you come to understand yourself well, if you complement your meditation on emptiness with meditations on love and compassion and bodhicitta, then, in dependence on your own self-understanding, when you relate this to others, you'll feel compassion for them. And due to your love, you'll want them not to suffer in this way. And so when others act towards one in an unwanted manner, now, spontaneously, what arises within us is the result of our reflections on dependence arising in emptiness, so our mind stays calm and spacious, as well as our reflections on love. So our emptiness, reflections on emptiness and dependence arising will lead us to understand what's going on for this person. They've met a cause and the result arose. That's all. They believe that whatever has arisen in their mind exists in the way that it appears. And they are now responding. They have no freedom. They have no independence. They are not willingly acting in this way. They are under the control of their afflictions. So this we come to understand through our own reflections on dependence arising and emptiness in relation to ourselves. And then when we've also been reflecting on love and compassion, that too will arise in relation to this suffering mother being before us. And with love and compassion arising within us, our facial expression, our tone, the tone of our response will show this. And that alone will cause the suffering being to ease, their pain to ease. And in this way, we can have a profound and beneficial impact on suffering beings around us. So this is how I encourage you to engage in this meditation in our time apart. Because of these tremendous benefits that will come to oneself as well as others.
Then I encourage you also to rejoice on this opportunity that we've had this year. So now we're coming to the end of our last time together for this year. So rejoice in the opportunity that we've all attained. Everyone here has created the causes to be able to receive these precious teachings on emptiness and compassion of the Buddha. This is something phenomenal and we should really rejoice in. Likewise, our opportunity to strengthen our connections together. Moreover, strengthen one's determination to utilize these teachings to subdue our mind, to tame our mind, to restrain our mind, so as not to harm. Not to harm through our physical behavior or our way of speaking. But to do that well, we need to utilize these vast teachings we've received
to subdue our mind, to restrain our mind. And this restraining of the mind is ethical restraint. An ethical person, from the Buddha's perspective, is someone whose mind is restrained from coming under the influence of the afflictions. And this mind of ethical restraint is the primary cause for a good rebirth, enabling our ongoing spiritual progression. Moreover, take these reflections that we've been engaging in on emptiness and dependent arising to strengthen our mind of generosity, this wish to give to others, through recognizing that all that we have, whether it's our material resources, our skills, our talents, our merits, all this has come about in dependence on causes, is empty from inherent existence, and has come about in dependence on the kindness of others, so it should be utilized to benefit them. Likewise, use this understanding to deepen our practice of patience. The mind of patience is the mind that stays calm in the face of adversity. It is of supreme importance in terms of cultivating causes for good rebirths, and it is a result that comes from reflecting, comes about independence on reflecting on love and compassion as well as emptiness. And then fourthly, joyous perseverance. Reflect on that. Continue to reflect on this. Make one's mind joyful in our opportunity to engage in the Dharma. Just like I mentioned in the first point here, rejoice in our opportunity. Not only because it creates vast merit by recognizing that this merit that we've accumulated is empty because it's come about in dependence on causes. These opportunities, so too, are empty because they've come about in dependence on causes. But by doing so, we create the causes that from lifetime to lifetime, we'll want to meet the Dharma and engage in the Dharma. And this then links to the final cause to make regularly, and that is to make stainless prayers, that in all our lives, may we never be separated from the perfect Lamas, and through them, enjoy the magnificent Dharma. From lifetime to lifetime, may we come under the care of a Mahayana spiritual friend, recognize them for the great qualities, the great being that they are, and engage in their teachings, cultivate their teachings within one.
And then, Karasam Dongarsene, Jambata Zewa, Simjan Tamje Dewa de Dena, Simbe Samrashita, Simjan Tamje Dungada, Jawa Shu, Simbe Samta, Dinis Samta, Simjan Dewa de Demba, Simjan Dungada, Jawa de Ni Chigi, Simbe Samrashita, Diniki,
Also, if you can, in your meditations, include those of love and compassion, the wish for all others to abide in lasting, stable happiness, the wish for all others to be freed from pain and suffering. Do meditate on this. Even if it's only for a few moments, do so. And if you can recall it during the day, whoever I meet, may I do what I can to ensure that their suffering isn't compounded, but that they do experience happiness.
If
you can generate, take your love and compassion and develop it into bodhicitta, where you commit to striving to become a Buddha for the sake of others, because other than relying on a skilled guide to be taught what needs to be abandoned and how to do so, what needs to be cultivated and how to do so, beings really have no hope. Generate the determination to become that guide, so that all beings, particularly those you have strong connection with, that right now, as soon as possible, you can be the most positive of influences in their life.
Nga Ganglaya Madhuba Rangwanyu Dhuba said it's all gini mea simbigi, don't buy you some dad. Then Topja Sangyo Kuhan said yeah, Sangye said, Ganglaya Madhu Rangwanyu Dhub Dhuba Sangye Jime said. Simjin Tamjigi Dunda Sangye Chichidu, Simjin Digi in there, Ganglaya Madhu Rangwanyu Dhub Digi Simjin Jia me, Rangwanyu Dhub Digi Sangye me, Rangwanyu Dhuba Nasi mea, sitting Nasi at Sangye said, Simjin Karina, Chazan.
Having made the commitment to strive oneself to become a Buddha for the sake of others, then reflect on the reality or reflect on what one has just committed to through one's wisdom. This I, who is this I that is striving for enlightenment? This enlightenment that one is striving for, how does that exist? And that this is being done for the sake of suffering beings, how do they exist? So all three, oneself, enlightenment, sentient beings, come to recognize that they do not exist by way of their own nature, but are empty of existing by way of their own nature, yet exist conventionally as mere imputations by mind. So here, at this point of the meditation, one can explicitly meditate on emptiness, and whilst we haven't realized emptiness yet, here we deepen our familiarity. If one is sufficiently familiar, then this understanding of reality we can apply to each of the previous steps too. Primary topics of meditation are love and compassion, wisdom, the wisdom realizing emptiness, and ethical restraint. These are of paramount importance. So I really encourage you to meditate on these as often as you can. And where you have more time, do so more than once in a day, as well as recalling these topics during the day. It's imperative that we use what remains of this life to strengthen our habituation to these virtuous minds, so they become ever more deeply ingrained with us, within us, and influence our interactions with others ever more. And also, it's of great importance to make heartfelt supplications to one's Lama and Yidam, perhaps offer prostrations or make offerings, to doing this together with sincere prayer that one's progression in our spiritual development goes well, that all obstacles we encounter, we transform into the path, and thereby we rapidly fulfill their heartfelt wishes by developing the essence of their teachings within ourselves. It's also of great importance to dedicate the virtue that is accumulated. And dedication shouldn't just happen at the end of the retreat or end of a teaching session, but after every meditation session. And if you're doing more than one in a day, after each. And at the end of the day, no matter what you've done that day, virtue would have been accumulated, dedicated. This is important so that it doesn't go to waste. In the dependence on each other, we have all accumulated so much merit this year. Now we can come to dedicate this vast store of merit. Firstly, when we're reciting the dedication prayers, hold in mind that may all the Buddha Dharma remain in the world for a long time. May all holy beings, such as His Holiness and Lama Zopa and all others, may they too remain in the world for a long time. And may all their enlightened activities be successful. Dedicate that all beings throughout the world, human and non-human, that all their suffering, whether it's physical illness or any other physical ailments, as well as all mental difficulties and pain that they experience, may they gain freedom from this. Where medical treatment is required, may all beings receive excellent medical treatment and may be successful. And moreover, may all beings generate deep and sincere love and compassion within themselves. Furthermore, dedicate that this Dharma Center, this place where we've been so fortunate to meet the Buddha Dharma and engage with the Buddha Dharma, that all the activities here go supremely well. And all those people who help make this Dharma Center flourish, may all their aspirations be fulfilled quickly in accordance with the Dharma. And not just this Dharma Center, but we are part of a large organization. May all the FPMT centers and projects, as well as all the staff and volunteers and students who make these centers possible, may all their hopes and aspirations be fulfilled quickly in accordance with the Dharma. And not just restricting this to only our group, but for all beings and all projects throughout the world that are focused on bringing happiness and alleviating suffering, may whether the techniques are those of the Dharma or other philosophies or completely secular, May all their aspirations to bring happiness and alleviate suffering, may they be supremely successful as quickly as possible. And also dedicate that in the new year, that we continue to have the opportunity to meet together and continue to receive teachings and continue with our spiritual development. And between now and then, that we develop ever more merit and wisdom within our continuum through deepening our love, our compassion, and our wisdom. And that year by year, we have the opportunity and we make the most of it to develop and cultivate merit and wisdom within us, love, compassion, and the wisdom understanding reality within us.
Christmas ligore and losa ligore tin chasan chik jibu yaya da and losa bi kablia chan losa bi ngat lob chen dil chasan ya chik ya wo che dom chen ngat chasan da lob chen tu chen cha yi ko ko pra ya gi da chi ti le si mon de chi ti le si ngat ta ma ti de.
And for many of you, this will be the last time I see you directly for the year. So I want to take the opportunity to wish you both Happy Christmas and Happy New Year, and that all your hopes and aspirations go well, as well as for your loved ones and others that you'll spend time with. May all relationships be harmonious, and may all give rise to love and compassion within them. So thank you so much.